It's about roots. And the deeper they run, the farther they'll take you. Whether it's food, drink, agriculture, or, hey, even music, these are roots which sustain a culture. I'm Melissa Corbin of Corbin and the Dell, a travel show for those who give a damn. Follow me as I travel in search of folks who make their corner of this big old world of ours so unique. This weekend is the Great American Beer Festival happening in Denver, Colorado. Y'all, it is sold out. So, if you've never been, this is the granddaddy of all American beer festivals. Like most, you'll have plenty of those pretzel necklaces. Oh, there'll be a few blonde locks with those perfectly placed hop wreaths. And you got your fair share of frat daddies, too. Still, for the competitors at this festival, it's a big old deal to walk away with top honors. Diploma Master Brewer and VP Production at Paternalis Brewing Company, Peter McFarlane, has been going to the festival since 1989 and has been a judge off and on since 1992. He's been asked to be a judge again this year. I swung by his neck of the woods in Fredericksburg, Texas this past summer. So if you like to geek out like I do over the chemistry, craft, and plain old good taste of beer, this is the show for you. Listen in as Peter and I taste a good bit of his Paternalis portfolio, and I learn how to get one over on my hop-loving hipster friends. How about that for alliteration? We are here at Paternalis Brewing Company, and I'm talking with the master brewer, Peter McFarlane. Peter, tell me what we're drinking today.
Well, we're going to start off with the Lobo Lito, and this is one of our mainline beers, and it's a session beer, so it's a nice light summer lager, and it's about 4% alcohol. We use German noble hops in this one, and some specialty grains direct from Germany, and some people could call it a lawnmower beer, but it's nice and light, refreshing drinker.
All right, then. So, first, would you say that this is one of your flagship beers?
Yes. I'd say the Texas Lager and the Lobo Lito would be the two Lobo brands that are flagship for us.
Well, I can definitely see why someone would call this a lawnmower beer, but goodness, you could drink it all afternoon, whether you mowed the yard or not, right?
Certainly.
So, Peter, how did you get your start into the industry?
Oh, I get asked that a lot. And there's a long story, but the short story is a hobby gone bad. So that's, you know, and that's coming this September, it'll be 29 years that I've been a professional brewer. And I went from a hobbyist up in Alaska and really out of necessity making some home brews. Well, I lived in the bush and way out in the country. And then put myself through brewing school in the late 80s and got a master's degree and an engineering degree in brewing science and building breweries. And I've been brewing across most of the western states ever since.
So where did you go to school?
The Siebel Institute of Technology in Chicago, Illinois. It's one of the top three or four schools back in the 80s for sure. Top three schools in the world. The other two were in Germany, maybe, and one in Scotland. Now today, there's a lot of colleges offering brewing schools and brewing certificates.
Alaska and then Texas. There's a little bit of difference there in the way that you. I'm sure that the process is. What's the major difference?
Well, I was really living most of my adult life in Flagstaff, Arizona, and went up to Alaska to help my brother build a cabin out in the bush. And once that was accomplished, I stayed over and helped him do some gold mining and some flying, and I became a bush pilot for a little while, and then back and forth to Flagstaff a little bit. And then I brewed in about five or seven different states and opened up 9 or 10 different breweries. And I was actually out of the brewing business for a few months, or actually a few years, making wine in Napa, California, when I got a call from the owner here. They were putting together this program. They hadn't started brewing yet, but he had procured some equipment and didn't have a master brewer to put everything together and to start the operation up. So I came down initially to help them get started, and then they offered me equity position ownership. And so my wife and I stayed, and we bought a house here, and here we are, Texas. Yeah, so it's a big change. Alaska, Flagstaff, several other states, and then down here to the south.
So what are we drinking next?
Well, I think maybe we should probably go to the Front Porch or the REK. We have two brands with Robert Earl Keen. He's a fairly well-known musician here along down south mainly, and across the south, from Florida all the way across, all the way into California, San Diego. So we have a brand with his name on it that is quickly becoming our number one or number two sellers. So let's try that Honey Pills.
Yeah, I guess they say, win in Rome or something to that effect.
Sure.
All right, so we're doing the Honey Pills next. So the Robert Earl Keen taps here, they're shaped in the image of a guitar. And I believe it was the Front Porch I had yesterday in addition to the Lobo, but I got to tell you, these beers are nice and clean and crisp. All right, so here we go with the Honey Pills.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The Honey Pills is also a lager beer, but mainly we're a lager producing brewery here. We do have some ales just because the younger crowd screams for their hops, but I think you'll find this Honey Pills is quite nice and light and refreshing as well, and a nice balance of malt and the hops in this. So this is also a lager beer in the German tradition, about 5% alcohol, and a nice, clean, refreshing beer.
What do you say to the younger crowd that has the notion for hops? What do you say to them that when they turn their nose up to, say, a lager?
I'll typically just talk to them about beer styles, and then I'll just let them know that they'll be back soon enough to be drinking lagers on a day-to-day basis. And when they're done flying around from IPA to IPA, or pale ale to pale ale, and hop bombs to hop bombs, when their palate's all worn out from too many hops and too much bitterness, at the end of the day or at the end of the year or whenever they get tired of too many hops, what I call unbalanced hoppy beers, almost everybody settles back and drinks lagers. Lager beer across the world is number one seller by far. Ales, on the other hand, much younger and sharper on their flavors, not just hops, but all their flavors of caramel malt and or base malts, tend to be a little sharper on the palate. And lagers just tend to be a lot more mellow on the palate and cleaner finish, and are almost always filtered and beautiful, beautiful sparkling beers.
Yeah, there's no hiding with these beers.
There's no hiding in any of these lighter lagers because there's absolutely just bare knuckle beers. They've got your basic four ingredients in beer and nothing more, nothing less. And the trick with lagers is a cold storage time, which is what lagering means literally, cold lager or cold storage. And that just blends all the flavors together and makes really, really smooth, drinkable beer.
So we're having the Honey Pills. And over here in the corner, I see an award that has a little honey pot on it.
Yeah, yeah. On occasion, we send our beers to different competitions, and they're always competitions that are BJCP certified and or Master Brewer only sort of competitions. So we don't really enter our beers in state fairs or county fairs or neighborhood stuff. We go for just the three or four large national and international competitions. And yeah, so this honey beer, and if you look closer at the board, you'll see that this beer has won quite a few awards nationwide and internationally.
So where's the honey coming from?
Okay, this is part of the fun of making this beer is, number one, Robert Earl Keen, whose name's on this beer specifically, lives here in the Hill Country, a little town 20 miles away called Kerrville. And the honey comes from the Hill Country here as well. Now, if we were in a region that was good for growing hops and barley, which we're not down south here, most of those, hops is an herb that grows up in the northern climes, Oregon, Washington, Idaho are really the largest growing areas for hops. And the same with brewing grade barley and malted barley. And they basically come from North Dakota, Minnesota, up in Saskatchewan, Alberta, and all the plains. The northern plains is where all of the really good barley for North America comes from. And then a lot of my lagers, I also put a large percentage of German-grown and malted barley into a lot of my lagers as well, so that I get the real authentic German lager, German Pilsner lager flavor and feel.
As much as I'd want to hang out with this Honey Peels, I know we've got a few more to taste. So where are we headed next?
Let's just go to the next REK with the Amber Ale. And this is going to have a little bit of caramel malt added to it for color and for flavor. So let's try that next.
All right, then. Here we go. So we're doing the, tell us again which one.
Okay, this is the Robert Earl Keen, or what we just call REK Amber Ale. And the Amber Ale is also 5% lager, but it's a little darker in color, but you can hold it up to light and you can see right through. It's nice amber color, or what I call it, a nice rich copper sort of color. And sparkling beautiful, maintains a nice frothy head all the way to the bottom of the glass. And the color comes from taking the base barley malt and toasting it, just like you would maybe toast a piece of bread or a bagel or something like that. The longer you leave it in the toaster, the darker it gets. So this is lightly toasted malt, but just only at about 4 to 6% of the malt bill gives it that color and flavor. The rest is just is your standard base malts that we use. Cheers.
You know what? I can taste the malt, but sometimes when you see a beer this color, you think you're going to have like your face in a big vat of butterscotch or something, and it's not that at all.
Yeah, that can happen, you know, and it's usually a flaw of the brew house. You can get all sorts of colors, everything from light honey golden yellow all the way through this copper color, all the way to a dark brown or brown ales and brown lagers, and all the way to really like black beers, which we'll try later. We have a porter here, but we also have a dark lager beer that's called a Schwarzbier, and that's a real German dark lager. And a lot of people see color in their beer, and they go, oh, it's going to be a big-bodied beer, or it has too much alcohol for me. I'm sticking with my, you know, my lighter beers. And really, this is only 5% also, but it just has more character because of the complex togetherness, if you want to call it that, of the different types of malt that we put into this beer specifically. Blending, maybe. How about that? Instead of togetherness, we'll say blending.
I'm enjoying these beers, but if I drink all of everything... They've got us drinking wine all afternoon, so it'll...
Oh, boy, you got a good big day today, right? Well, this is the wine trail here at Fredericksburg in the Hill Country, and believe it or not, the Hill Country, Fredericksburg, Texas, in this area, is the second most visited wine destination in the nation behind Napa and Sonoma counties in Northern California. So this is a real go-to place now, and a destination not just for people around Texas but the nation and actually the world.
Yeah, so you've spent your time making wine. Do you ever feel the itch to make again since you're here amongst all of these beautiful wineries?
I think about it on occasion, but really after 5 years of making wine, it's not near as exciting and near as technical on a day-to-day basis for me, and the challenges are a little bit less, honestly. Wine is really fast and furious in the fall when you're harvesting the grapes. And they call that the crush, because you bring the grapes in from the field and you crush and juice get the juice off of the skins. And then, you know, it's sort of boring because the wine sits in these barrels for 1 to 2 to 3 years. You might have to, you know, pump them from one barrel to the other and clean the barrels and put them back in the barrels. But really, the brewing industry is like crush every day. We run around the clock here 4 days a week usually. And it's pell-mell all the time. And the brewers are going, the packaging's going fast and furious, the laboratory's looking at all the beer profiling and ordering, receiving. I mean, the whole thing, it's like crush every single day in a brewery. And that, to me, is way more exciting.
Well, speaking of exciting, what are we doing, Peter?
Well, let's try a real classic German beer. It's actually in the ale category, which is really rare for Germans to make quote-unquote ale. This is called a Hefeweizen, and Hefeweizen in German Hefe means yeast, Weizen means wheat. So this is a yeasty or unfiltered wheat beer. So this is one of the only ones that we have that's not filtered on purpose, and it also has a very unique yeast strain that gives this beer specific flavors that you're about to find out, and they're very exciting. German Hefeweizen, yeasty wheat beer. Hold it up to the light, and yes, it's cloudy, right? And it's cloudy on purpose. It's not just the yeast cells that are still in suspension, but also proteins and a lot of vitamins in that haze right there. So this, by the way, is a super light golden color as we hold it in our hands. And if you ever saw even the major brands, the lighter brands, say like, you know, Bud, Miller, Coors, those guys, they look just like this before they're filtered, exactly like this. As a matter of fact, my lighter lagers also, they all look exactly like this before you filter out all of the proteinaceous material and the yeast cells that are still in suspension. But we keep these in here on purpose because it adds a little bit more body to it, and it is a lighter beer. It's 5%, just under 5%, about 4.8%. And you're going to be looking for a couple of flavors here. The first thing that'll hit you is as you put the glass up to your face, your nose will pick out some fruity esters, and a lot of people immediately pick out banana. And some people, apricot and some other pit-type fruits. And then as you take a sip, inhale through your nose as you're sipping. And after you have one or two swallows of this beer, you'll go, oh, I really get that banana. But then wait for about 4 to 5 seconds and clove. The same spicy clove that you would put in your ham at Christmas or Thanksgiving is the exact same flavors you're getting out of this beer. So those fruity esters like banana and the clove, nothing is added to this beer to make those flavors. What I talked about earlier is the yeast strain for this is called Delbrueckii, and that yeast strain is used only for one style of beer in the entire world because of the flavors it throws, which are the two flavors we just mentioned, clove and banana. So this is a true German Hefeweizen. 50% of the malt is malted wheat and 50% malted barley. Most of these grains come directly from Germany. All of the yeast and the hops for this beer comes directly from Germany. So in that spirit, I'd say Prost.
Here's to a few extra vitamins.
And extra vitamins. I'll tell you why I say extra vitamins, because vitamin B12 is thiamine, and yeast cells specifically are really, really high in vitamin B complexes. The one thing that alcohol does in your body is it robs your body of vitamin B complexes. And one of the reasons when you overconsume and you get a headache and you feel bad the next morning is because you need those vitamins to kind of recoup and recover, not just rehydration, but you also need the vitamin B complexes. Well, so I call this beer my non-hangover beer.
Good morning beer.
It's actually one of the best morning waker-uppers that you can have.
I did the whole sniffing while I'm sipping thing, and I definitely taste the clove.
Oh, good, good. Excellent. Well, you've got a good palate.
I guess so. It's a used one, that's for sure.
Well, tasting beer along with wine and or food group things, you know, it takes practice. So here at Petronella's Brewing Company, we practice every day. Yeah, every day.
Just like an athlete going for a marathon.
Of course.
All right. This is wonderful, but I got to tell you, we're going to be moving on here in a little while, so Well, what are we doing next, Peter?
I think we should probably stick with one more lager, and it's going to move us to the dark lager, which I mentioned earlier, the Schwarzbier.
Yeah.
And it's a dark lager. And people look at a dark beer and they start getting scared and they go, oh, it's going to be too much alcohol. Just remember that light color, medium copper color, dark brown or black beers don't necessarily mean alcohol level. They just mean how much you've toasted a small percentage, like I mentioned earlier, 4, 6, or 8% of the barley malted then gets toasted just to give roasty flavors and color. That's all. So let's try a Lobo Negro, which is a German style lager beer in the Schwarzbier category.
Oh, wow. It's almost got a little bit of a little cookie taste to it.
Kind of chocolate chip cookie flavor to it. And I always say just a little bit of coffee almost and a little bit of chocolate notes to this. A very specific toasted and roasted, almost burnt grain goes into this, but only at about 3.5-4% of the total grain bill. And that's what gives you those toasty, roasty, chocolatey notes. Mm-hmm. I didn't add any Snicker bars to this beer, and I didn't add any coffee. But there are ales out there. A lot of modern brewers are adding chocolate, you know, like Baker's Chocolate, to their usually a darker beer like a porter or a stout. And there's coffee beers out there. There's all sorts of stuff people are putting in their beers now. But I try to remain as traditional as I can to pretty much all of my beers. We're not making any fruit beers. We're not making any herb beers. We're not making any chicken bone beers or, you know, any crazy stuff around here yet.
Uh-oh. I think Peter just kind of dangled a carrot.
Well, not for the chicken bone thing, but, you know.
Well, now that's just wrong, Peter.
That is wrong. You know, the animal products certainly don't belong in beer. But, you know, believe it or not, I read every magazine that comes out about beer, wine, and the distilled spirits industry. And, you know, there's bacon beers out there. There's actually a bacon beer fest just in our neighborhood down near San Antonio every year. And it's a little crazy. Not everyone's putting bacon in their beer, but they might have bacon sandwiches or bacon on their burgers along with a beer. But there are people putting, you know, smoke flavors and hickory smoke flavors, and or some of these crazy pub brewers are like dropping sheets of bacon in their boiling kettle, which I, you know, it totally ruins the head with fat inside the boiling kettle. You can't maintain a frothy head on your beer. And it just, you know, I like bacon, but I like to eat it and then follow it with a really good crisp beer. And that washes your palate and that makes you feel good.
It does more than make you feel good. It makes your toes tingle a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I'm getting hungry. Jeesh. Take a look at this beer while we still have it in our hand.
Yeah.
And hold it up to the light, and you will see it is not as black and dark as I call this, really, really dark brown to almost black. Not quite. And it's filtered, and you can see right through it. And did you think it was heavy?
No, not at all. And, you know, at this first point that I've held this particular one up to the light, if I didn't know I was having a beer, you could almost pass that as a really good Coca-Cola.
It almost has that exact color. Yep. And it's not quite as carbonated as a soda would be, maybe about a third less. And we measure that in volumes of CO2 dissolved in the fluid, just like they do for beer, just like they do for sparkling wines and champagnes, and just like they do for soda and sparkling waters. So usually champagne, sparkling waters, soda are quite a bit more carbonated than what you get in your average or traditional beers. So let's go, since we're on this dark beer and we've been doing all lager so far, we're going to move over to ales now, and let's start, and it's not typical, but since we're at dark beer, let's just go straight to the dark porter beer. And this is an English style ale, and typically very dark, but not as black as a stout, and usually not as heavy in alcohol as a stout. But also, imperial stouts are higher alcohol, but believe it or not, the exported stout, and everyone knows the name Guinness, that's exported here to the United States is very light. It's actually a light beer, not light as in calories, but it's light in alcohol. It's usually just under 5% alcohol, believe it or not. So these beers are typically about 4.5% or 5% alcohol, while other people are having their IPAs and their double IPAs and their 6, 7, and 8% beers. And you go, well, you know, I'm having this dark beer, and it, I, well, you're drinking a beer that's half the alcohol of what they're doing, and you're keeping pace.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Is that when you play Truth or Dare? Hey, watch this.
Anyway, okay, so now hold this one up to a light. Okay, so this is our first ale. This is quite a bit darker. You absolutely can't see through it. You might see a little dark reddish or coppery hue along the side of the glass, just where it's really thin. But other than that, even the head on this beer is kind of brownish. And this is now an ale. So you're going to see, and not many people get to do this side by side, is you just had a dark lager, and now you're going to have a dark ale. And let's see what the difference is when you taste it. Cheers.
Cheers. Well, for me, immediately, it's got a bigger bite to it on the front, in the middle of my tongue. But on the sides and in the back, it's still fairly round, yeah?
Yeah, so ales are specific in their, what you call, what you perceive as a bite, I say is probably a little bit of the hop note right up front. And then also there's chocolate malt in what we call chocolate malts in this. It's not chocolate added, but it's just a malting regime that toasts the malt to a deeper, darker spectrum. And there's a color chart that you can order your malts through. And anyway, these are going to give more kind of drying notes on your palate after you have a couple of sips. And way more chocolate, I think, on this than the lager. But ales, in general, have sharp flavor-forward notes. And it's because they ferment at a little bit higher temperature, usually 10, 15, sometimes 20 degrees warmer, which then also throws fruity notes out into the beer from the warmer fermentation. And the ale yeast strains themselves are typically a little bit more fruit-forward. But, you know, I hopped this beer with some English hops, and you'll find that up front. Also, this beer is much younger than any of the lagers because it ferments out in about 4 to 5 days, and then it's crash cool to 32 degrees, and within 2 weeks, it's in the package and out the door. Our lagers take 9 or 10 days to primary ferment. They're crashed down for about a week, and then they're transferred to a horizontal lagering tank where they spend another 2 to 3 weeks before they're released. So that's where the mellowing and blending of a lager happens. The ales don't get that time or consideration. They get a fast and furious, warmer, not hot by any means, just warmer fermentation, and then package out the door fresh, fresh, fresh.
I have a question. So this has been an ongoing conversation I've had with folks all week long. Do you prefer to drink all of your favorite all at once, or do you prefer to save the last sip or the last bite, whatever the case may be, of your favorite so that you leave with something wonderful on your palate?
Oh, I think the latter. You know, I try to achieve a really, really great balance with my beers so that whether you stop in the middle and have to go do something or your last sip and you have to go and you're not going to have another beer for a few hours or till tomorrow, I think the last sip should always be pleasant. And, you know, a lot of it's atmosphere. A lot of it is the actual beer. A lot to do with your friends that are surrounding you when you're having a beer, because it's a very social type of thing to do, is to have beers with your friends. And there's nothing better than walking away satisfied after a great meal or really, really great beer. And just, you know, I'm walking home and my palate is happy and so am I, you know. And I'm not racing, you know, I'm not racing for water and I'm not racing for something to cleanse my palate, because the beer just cleansed my palate and I'm satisfied and happy.
Well, I got to tell you, Peter, I would give anything to try all of these beers. but I got a lot of wine drinking to do this afternoon. Is there any other beer we really, really need to try?
You should try one more, okay? And it's another ale. And we call it the Texas Hop Bomb. And this is what I call a one-off. We just make 20 barrels of these one-offs. And this is Texas Hop Bomb number 4. So we've done 3 previously. And it's what's called a smash IPA. And a smash IPA is a single malt and single hop. So S-M-A-S-H, single malt and single hop. And smash IPAs are kind of a thing going around the nation. And it gives the brewer some a little bit of creativity where I can choose one single malt to make this beer from and one single hop. Now, all these other beers we've been tasting is a conglomerate of several types of malt and several types of hops. This doesn't get that chance or choice. So it's a real challenge for the brewer to put together the correct malt and match it with the correct hop. So let's try this. It's going to be our highest alcohol beer at 8%. And we use the Citra hops. And you're going to, when I pour this, you're going to just smell beautiful, fresh, fresh, fresh hops. It just got on tap just about a week ago.
And would it be safe to assume that this is one of those beers that you were talking about earlier that it was made to honor the youngins that come through here?
That's exactly right. You know, the younger generation, and I guess it's millennials, or there must be another name for the, you know, the latest generation after that. I can't keep up with it all. But, they're screaming for what I call West Coast IPAs, Imperial IPAs. And we, around here, we nickname them one-dimensional tongue numbers, right? So it's so much hop that you just can't taste anything or smell anything else but hop. So this isn't as big as the biggest ones that you see, and it will not strip the enamel off your teeth, but you're going to notice that this has more hop than anything you've tasted so far. So the balance here is way over on the Citra hop category and off of the malt. So really up front, you're going to get hop citrusy, piney, grassy hop notes. Remember, hops is an herb. And on the finish, you're going to have a bitter finish on the way, way, way back of your palate, as far back of your tongue as you can possibly taste. And that's where all your bitterness sensors are on your palate. So let's try this tongue number.
Here's to having a little happy taste on the palate.
Cheers.
Peter's sending me off all hopped up for the day. What'd you say? It was 8%?
This is 8%. So, you know, you're only half of what the wine you're going to be drinking pretty soon. You know your lighter white wines are going to be 9, 10, and 11%. And then you're going to get into some Cabs and Zins and Tempranillos today on the wine trail that are going to hit, you know, 14% and higher. I doubt you'll hit, unless you go to Napa, you probably won't hit the 16 and 17% Zinfandels that they've been making out there for the last 8 or 10 years, and they've gone crazy out there. I don't know. But anyway, I'll make you a deal. If this is too bitter for you, I don't want you to walk away. And I know you have a designated driver, so I'm not scared of you having one more sip of something that's really, really well balanced and maybe one of your favorites that we've tried already, so that you finish this tasting on a real, real pleasant note. Unless you want to have, you know, a nice bitter palate.
I'll take door number 3, Peter. Okay. Hook a sister up.
Okay, you got it. And what one is your favorite?
I got to tell you, I liked the dark lager.
The dark lager, the go-to. Are you sure you're not from Texas? Because holy cow, I tell you, when I moved here, I was really surprised. But women in Texas, they all year round, they go to that dark lager.
Really?
Unbelievable. I brewed in like five or seven different states and opened up a bunch of different breweries. And, you know, it gets to the summer and people pretty much shy away from the dark lagers, you know. But down here in Texas, they're all about it, and the women are even crazier for it than the men. And I love that about this place. Love it.
Big hair and big beer. What's that old saying about, the higher the hair, the higher to God, or closer to God? Oh, hell, I don't know. Needless to say, I may not have the best back comb these days, but I sure did have my fair share of sips while in Fredericksburg, all the while tapping my toe to some Robert Earl Keen tunes. Now, I've included a link to his classic Feeling Good Again in today's show notes, but you want a little bit more taste of Fredericksburg, you're going to have to stay tuned to my upcoming travel show. Y'all, I am so happy that you have found me over here at CorbinInTheDale.com. I will soon be on iTunes, and I sure could use your support in subscribing to that show once that happens. So head on over and click the link on my website to subscribe to my newsletter. I'll give you a heads up when that happens. But meanwhile, you never know where I'll turn up. So follow me on Instagram at Mel Corbin and on Twitter at MD Corbin. This is Melissa Corbin, and I'm wishing you that your roots run deep, your travels take you far, and may you make memories to last you a lifetime.